disperse immediately or you will be subject to arrest with now.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128 bit war, you play Nintendo on some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't.
Welcome to This Is America, December 13th, 2018. In this episode, we speak with a teacher that was part of a recent wildcat strike in Oakland, California, and ask them what led to the action and where they see things heading in the near future. We then talk to a volunteer with Mutual Aid Disaster Relief about the situation in Panama City, Florida, where months after Hurricane Michael hit, hundreds of poor and working people are still living in the streets after being displaced and evicted from their homes and apartments. We talk about yet another eviction, this time of a tent city of remaining survivors of the hurricane who were pushed out, again, with literally nowhere else to go. All this and more, but first, let's get to the news. Teachers in Oakland, California staged a sick out and wildcat strike against low pay and high classroom sizes. Teachers and supporters from various sites refused to go into work and then marched to the center of the city to hold a rally. Check out our interview with the striking teacher later in the show. In other labor news, Wobblies in the Pacific Northwest are celebrating, the third store to officially vote in the industrial workers of the world. Burgerville workers are also gearing up for a picket on Monday. They write, "At the bargaining table, Burgerville Corporation is dragging their feet and not responding to economic proposals. Enough is enough. It's time for corporate to listen to the workers' demands. Join the picket at the Hawthorne Burgerville at 1122 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard on Monday, December 17th at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the exact spot to meet up. Check their Facebook, linked in our show notes for more information. In the Pilsen neighborhood of Chicago, anti-gentrification protesters physically blockaded a, quote, emerging neighborhoods event where major developers intended to discuss where to gentrify and displace next. There must be something in the water because people in Chicago also launched another blockade, this time against an Amazon logistics center. The blockade was to call attention to Amazon's role in the deportation machine. In so-called Canada, RCMP officers arrested Native demonstrators in British Columbia who were protesting against closed-door meetings regarding resource extraction and pipeline projects. As the Tiny House Warriors stated in a statement on their Facebook, quote, "Just because the government talks to a few bands recognized by Indigenous and Northern Affairs Canada, that doesn't amount to meaningful consultation." Across so-called Canada, blockades and pickets continue in solidarity with the postal strike, and members of the IWW are on the front lines of street blockades and pickets that are keeping job actions going as the state has pushed for postal workers to go back to work in the face of massive fines. Speaking of Canada, the Ottawa General Defense Committee, or the GDC, is launching a fundraiser for comrades arrested at a recent anti-fascist mobilization against various far-right, neo-fascist, and anti-Muslim organizations. Check out the link to the fundraiser in our show notes. Here's a quote from a recent report back on the action. "Though we were outnumbered 3-1, our forces were able to achieve great actions and proved our fighting spirit. Unfortunately, our task of shutting down the fascist rally was not achieved. The presence of riot police and the numbers that the fascists bust in was too large for us to mobilize against with only 1 week's notice. Yet great lessons can be taken from this struggle and will lead to greater action and understanding of our conditions in Ottawa for the revolutionary anti-fascist movement." Both Appalachians Against Pipelines and Louis S. Levi Camp have brand new slick campaign videos. Check them out in our show notes. Here's the audio from the video for Appalachians Against Pipelines.
"Why am I up here? If I may paraphrase Henry David Thoreau, my answer to the question, what are you doing up there, is what are you doing down there? Being in the tree is just the logical course of action.
Do you see the diamonds in the sky? Do you see it?
Yes.
But for me, my actions are just the natural outgrowth of my beliefs. I'm not going to wait for some politician or some business person to come along with what they consider to be a solution to the world's problems. I think for me, what it means to be fully human is to experience the world directly, and when you see injustice and when you see things that upset you, to be upset by those things and then to take action directly in your own life. And as I've had time to think about things up here, what I am seeing more and more is that I'm really fighting against an entire way of seeing the world and of being in the world, of which this pipeline in particular and capitalism are really just examples.
We believe in our clear imagination, young and old, every color, every kind, there is dignity and harmony when all are well.
And as much as possible, what I'm trying to do with my life is to try and find a new way of being in the world.
Work, join the men in line, shouting each voice is heard when every vote is counted. They proudly march together for your rights and mine. We believe in our clear imagination, young and old, every color, every kind, there is dignity and harmony when all are welcome and none are left behind.
Like a diamond in the sky, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
With gratitude and purpose, we are standing on the mountain to protect the trees they planted and keep their dreams alive. Where the earth is rich and the water is clear, we come to honor those who cared enough to leave.
In Minneapolis, people held a banner in solidarity with a group of people in the UK who attempted to stop deportations from being carried out by plane. The group wrote, quote, "To our friends across the pond facing a lifetime prison sentence, we send you our love, our rage, and our unyielding solidarity. Their jails and their borders will never contain us." People held a march and a rally outside of the home of Steve Miller in Washington, D.C. to again protest his hand in anti-immigration legislation. In Tijuana, Unicorn Riot reports that migrants, including those on hunger strike, marched to the U.S. Embassy to demand asylum recently. Trolls on 4chan are pushing an attempt to hold, quote, solidarity demonstrations with the Yellow Vest riots in France. Check out the locations we have in our show notes, do your own research, and be prepared to push the fascists firmly out of this movement, just as our French comrades have. Back in so-called Canada, people are marching and mobilizing in solidarity with the Unistoten camp in various cities. In Casa Grande, Arizona, Anti-Colonial Land Defense did a banner action reading, quote, "Divest from genocide, no Line 3, no Keystone XL," outside of a Wells Fargo branch bank. Pushed by a Black Lives Matter activist, Tennessee's so-called governor has recently stated that he is considering pardoning Centoia Brown, a sex trafficking victim currently serving a life sentence for first-degree murder, after she killed her would-be rapist. For more background information on the case, be sure to check out the latest episode of The Guillotine, and be sure to put pressure on the state with Collins, which you can find more information for linked in our show notes. Members of Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement Elm City are fundraising for legal support. Two young people who witnessed the police execute their friends are being held on trumped-up charges and high bail amounts to silence them. Help them out and fight back. Please donate at the link linked in our show notes. Lastly, as lame duck Republican officials get ready to leave the Capitol in Michigan, they are attempting to, quote, stomp out measures to raise the minimum wage and guarantee paid sick leave. In response, hundreds of people have flooded the Capitol in protest, banging on banisters and chanting, while many more protest outside. This is a developing situation, and we expect to see more of this. That's going to do it for us today. Please enjoy the interviews, and we will see you soon. We want to thank each and every person that has recently donated to the It's Going Down Winter Fundraiser.
And before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
Well, because of your support, we are now halfway to meeting our goal of raising $10,000 by the end of 2018.
You think that kind of automation is easy or cheap?
So, if you want to support Revolutionary Autonomous Media, please don't hesitate to log on and donate.
Access main program. Access main security. Access main program grid.
You didn't say the magic word.
Please! God! Hate this hacker crap!
And donating is easy. Just go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and sign up to become a monthly supporter. Grab some awesome swag or make a one-time donation.
Hold on to your butts.
And now, back to the show. Okay, we are joined today with an educator in Oakland, California. We're going to be talking about a wildcat strike that happened in that city several days ago. We're going to be talking about the conditions that led to it and the organizing that kind of went into it, and also what the future holds for teachers there. But can you just introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. My name is Susie, and I'm a science teacher at Oakland High School in Oakland, California.
All right, awesome. Well, just in general, what are conditions like for teachers in Oakland? What's kind of led to this outbreak of activity, real quick?
Well, what's led to the outbreak of activity is that our union, OEA, the Oakland Education Association, has been, was negotiating in good faith with the district about getting us an increase in pay and a couple of other items that I'll talk about in just a minute. And last spring, we went into impasse. They made us a very lowball offer. The offer was 5% over 5 years, which if you understand basic economics, you realize that doesn't even keep up with the cost of living.
Right.
It would put us backwards at the end of 5 years. The other issues that are on the table for us, we're asking, I should point out, for a 12% raise over 3 years, I believe. We don't have enough money allocated to support staff, psychologists, school nurses. Our school nurses are currently working with massive ratios. They go from school to school. And of course, nurses are required when you have kids on medication during the day for things like asthma or juvenile diabetes that require monitoring. The psychologists are also working with enormous ratios. I mean, far bigger than one campus towards the students. Our special ed teachers are being pushed into ratios that are too high for the kind of specialized work that they are supposed to do. A lot of people don't realize, unless they've had somebody who received special education services, that every kid in special ed has an individualized education plan that needs to, by law, be met. And if you overload those classes with ratios that are too high, that's almost impossible to deliver with any kind of fidelity. And so that becomes problematic as well. So, and overall, smaller class sizes. So some of our classes here at Oakland High, we are lucky. We have a really wonderful principal. He's a good guy. And we went through some scheduling changes a couple of years ago. We went from a straight six, where kids go to six classes a day, to a rotating block schedule. And when we did that, we did reduce some class sizes. When I say reduction, I mean like some around 27 to 30. But there are lots of schools in the district, many, that have class sizes that are 35 and above. And here on our campus, we tend to see large class sizes in elective classrooms and in music classes and PE classes, things like that. PE classes can easily be up above 40, approaching 50. And it's just not a fair burden for a teacher who wants to, you know, keep the classroom running smoothly and safely.
Well, can you just tell us what happened with the strike itself?
Right. Well, nobody claimed to be sick.
Okay.
I think It was a work stoppage. That's what we've been calling it. It was not union supported. We knew going into it that it was not a OEA sanctioned event. But the teachers at Oakland High are a persistent and political group, and I think in our own environment here at the school and outside in the community, we like to push a lot for the betterment of institutional systems, including our schools. And we just decided the time had come to take some sort of action that would hopefully get the attention of our community and our Board of Education and our mayor, who they ultimately work for, and our superintendent of schools, and get them back to the table to start negotiating with us in good faith and in a way that shows that they have value for teachers.
So what do you think the next steps will be after this? Do you think that there's going to be more self-organized actions that'll come from the rank and file, or do you hope that this will push the union in a certain direction, or what do you think is going to happen?
I do think that there's going to be more self-organized actions, and I do think that we will begin to push a little bit more from the union. Yesterday we had a very successful hour of power. These are events that we have held in the past where we're on, like five different major intersections in Oakland where teachers show up, and yesterday we had a pretty good turnout. There's no doubt that a lot of people were inspired by our one-day work stoppage, and we have heard that there are other actions coming from other schools. We did have two other schools, I should point out, who we did not solicit, but they heard about it and joined us. One was Fremont High School, and one was Madison Park, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so they were down with us on Frank Ogawa Plaza in front of City Hall.
Oh, cool.
And it was, there were some highlights to the day. We marched down there, we rallied, we had speakers, there was singing and music and stuff happening. A group of our students took it upon themselves to storm the mayor's office in City Hall, demanding to be talked to, and she sent out her director of education, who tried to explain to them about property taxes and income and all sorts of stuff in a way that indicated perhaps he's not really good at speaking to teenagers. And interestingly enough, some of our students were at an event that night where the mayor was present, and everybody who was there commented on the fact that she wasn't polite to them, she didn't make eye contact with them. And during their presentations, she spent most of the time playing with her phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm curious, on this podcast, we've had teachers from both Arizona and also West Virginia talking about the strikes that took place this year. I'm curious, is that spirit of teacher strikes that came out of West Virginia, has that impacted what's going on in Oakland at all?
Well, I think it's a circle. I'd like to think that our strike in 1996 helped inform other districts across the country in a historical sense, and in a way that brings it back to us again. I do think that we are inspired. Oakland has a long history of protest, as you know, and I think we feel a little bit like it's our responsibility to continue to stand up for what we need to do. Yesterday we saw the first ever strike of charter school teachers settled in Chicago.
Right.
Successfully after 4 days.
How can people in the community support what the teachers are doing?
Well, I think that they are going to need to have patience and understanding with us when their teachers are not at school. I think that they need to come out and walk with us and chant with us and stand on street corners with us. They need to go to Board of Education meetings and make themselves heard.
Ce qui nous dérange, c'est qu'on divise les gens entre le mauvais gilet jaune et le gentil citoyen.
vous, vous êtes des sales menteurs. Vous ne faites pas dans le social, vous avez bloqué l'ascenseur. Normal que l'on n'ait pas le moral, bah ouais ça vous n'en avez pas. C'est pas qu'une question de gasoil, on ne vit pas que des aléas. Il est temps de vous ôter le voile. Vous nous taxez plus que ce que l'on gagne, la paix aux oubliettes. Si vous pouviez, vous prendriez notre âme aussi. Tant que vous y êtes, on travaille plus pour gagner moins. Le changement c'est pas maintenant, le SMIC n'a pas bougé de son coin. Mais tout augmente, c'est indécent, intéressante votre gestion des retraites. Le dossier expire bientôt, hein, donc pas besoin qu'on le traite. Ça parle de l'amour du pays, que faites-vous pour nous rassembler? Des fausses réformes vides, un peu comme les sièges de l'Assemblée. Laisse-moi mettre mon gilet jaune.
Okay, we are joined here today. We're going to be talking with somebody that was on the ground in Florida. Yesterday, there was a destruction of a tent city that was erected after one of the hurricanes that's hit that we've talked about on this program before. We're going to be talking with somebody that was there to witness what was going on. You just want to introduce yourself real quick?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm a volunteer here in Panama City with Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. Been here for few weeks now, a little over a month, and was there on the ground when the police and bulldozers arrived at the tent city.
And on this show, we've talked about kind of the aftermath of the hurricane that passed through Florida. We've talked to several people that were in Tallahassee and also that were going through Panama City doing mutual aid disaster relief. That was pretty much like in the direct aftermath of the storm. Just to the best of your knowledge, what's happened since then? We know that there was people that were basically thrown out of their apartments by landlords due to the storm. And I'm assuming these people that were in the tent city were the people, were some of those people that were evicted.
Yeah. So immediately after the storm, a lot of the landlords and property owners issued eviction notices to the tenants, trying to vacate them from the property. And usually it was a 3-day notice, sometimes as quick as a 2-day notice. And some of these evictions were either enforced or people didn't have much knowledge of their rights as tenants, so they left anyways. Luckily, people were able to inform a lot of the tenants of their rights as tenants, and many were able to stay. I was there at a few of the apartments trying to spread that information. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of people left, or their places, even if they wanted to stay, were uninhabitable. So a lot of people were displaced by the storm, and some of these tent cities started popping up and moving as different places didn't want to have people camping on their property. So this one that was evicted yesterday was the most recent one. Many of them were tenants who had been evicted or had their homes made uninhabitable. Some of them have experienced multiple evictions since the storm, from either places where they were pitching tents or their permanent homes from before the storm.
And how large would you say this one that was evicted the other day was?
I'm not exactly sure. I think, you know, from the looks of it, about a couple hundred people.
Oh, wow. So it's pretty large.
Many families. Yeah, multiple families.
Oh, wow. What has the response, if at all, from the state been? I mean, we know that talking to people with Mutual Aid Disaster Relief in the aftermath of the storm, there was like lots of Border Patrol kind of zooming around. There were lots of police. It kind of had the feel very much of something that was very heavily policed, very counterinsurgency style response. Also, there were groups like the Oath Keepers that were kind of bumbling around, although not really in a very large capacity. But like, were there groups giving out aid to people next to these tent cities, or were they just basically hunkered down in the middle of the wreckage?
Yeah, plenty of people have been arriving and providing help. You know, it's not the state, and it's mostly neighbors, and it's mostly small church groups for coming and dropping off donations, helping, you know, asking people what they need. The presence of the state, you know, on the other hand, has been largely to show a presence of force driving through, just to show that they're there. You know, one time I approached a Florida Housing Authority security asking why he was shining flashlights in somebody's home, and he, you know, he said, just making sure no one's killing each other or doing drugs. So they, you know, very racist undertones to a lot of the ways that they're approaching people and really into the situation.
So you were saying there were church groups that were dropping off food. Like, the area that the tent city was like, were there businesses and stores still open? Like, was, like, this, like, the area trying to basically kind of come back?
Yes and yes. So the area has been being rebuilt. A lot of the businesses are opening back up, and then that the tent city got evicted yesterday and bulldozed was because the mayor felt it was an eyesore for the city. And, you know, almost everyone I spoke to there and other residents of Bay County feel that way, that, the, you know, this is this is exactly what the mayor and the city were doing before the storm, and they're doing the same thing. They're trying to push houseless folks to the margins so that they're not visible and then a burden on businesses and the tourism industry here. And so, but then at the same time, like you said, it's also completely surrounded by complete devastation. And while businesses are still opening up. So yeah, yes, both.
Right. So what happens to these people? I mean, this was just completely devastated. I mean, they came in with bulldozers. I mean, do they give them anything? I mean, do they give them a bus pass somewhere, or are they telling them to go to a shelter? Or, you know, what is the state's response to destroying these tent cities?
The president of the state here was the police, and the county or the city was encouraging this place to be broken up. The police came in and enforced that. They had, you know, 6 cop cars, I think I counted, sitting there in the parking lot with the police just standing there all day as people are packing up. And then there is a nonprofit organization there, a larger nonprofit that was promising bus passes, promising help with getting people transportation, promising shelters. None of these promises really follows through. And so some people were able to get bus passes. Some people were able to get to shelters. Definitely not the majority, and a lot of people who arrived at shelters that were at capacity or had visa requirements that they couldn't meet. So for the most part, people were literally kicked to the curbside across the street. There were people standing there with all their stuff and fine right after that they were threatened by the police with arrest. And then all day, people were coming back to get their stuff, and people were told that yesterday that their stuff would be fine. They were told that they had a few days. They were told that at around 10 a.m. Then at 11 a.m., they were given 2 hours to get out of there. So the people who weren't there at 11, they had gone to work that morning. They came back in the evening to find their stuff bulldozed into piles. And so people were going through their stuff at night, like having to sneak onto the property at the risk of arrest. You know, personally, I was there till I think 11 p.m. I was driving around and didn't see anyone after that, but I was there all through the night helping people gather their stuff and transporting them.
God.
People had nowhere to go.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.